It's the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC. I'm Richard Hake in for Leonard today. Many of us assume that the political sex scandals we've seen in recent years involving Bill Clinton, Arnold Schwarzenegger, John Edwards, and other politicians are something new. But according to our next guest, Charles Lachman, media coverage of torrid political sex scandals dates back at least 100 years to the Grover Cleveland administration. In his latest book, A Secret Life, Mr. Lachman exposes a story about President Cleveland that was once tabloid fodder but has remained buried for years and includes accusations of rape, an illegitimate son, an orphanage, and an insane asylum. It's published by Skyhorse Publishing, and I'm pleased that it brings Charles Lachman to the Leonard Lopate Show today. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Richard. Thanks so much for having me.
No problem. This book reads like a salacious novel. Where did you come up with it? Where did you get the information?
Well, I had just completed research on a previous book about Abraham Lincoln's family called The Last Lincolns. And in the process of doing that research, I looked into the election campaign of 1884 because Robert Lincoln, Abraham's son, had been a prospective candidate. He didn't run, but the election campaign has gone down in history as the dirtiest in American history. And I became intrigued. I did a little more research, and I remember as a kid, just as a big fan of history, seeing that probably one of the greatest political cartoons ever published, the Ma Ma, Where's My Pa cartoon. And I just, it's a detective story. I consider myself an investigative historian, and I just made a query in my own head. Whatever happened to this scandal? What is the real story of the scandal? What happened to this woman?
Now, if you do a quick, you know, Wikipedia search of Grover Cleveland, his big claim to fame, of course, is he served two non-consecutive terms as president. He was the 22nd and 24th. And, of course, there is no mention of this scandal or of producing an illegitimate son. So how did it come about? How does the story go?
Well, it's quite a tale of the Victorian age in America. And it does read like a sordid romance novel, but it all happened. Grover Cleveland was a bachelor. He was a lawyer practicing in Buffalo, New York. Maria Halpin was a widow. She was 38 at the time that she encountered Cleveland. And she was working in a department store. She had two young children. She was a struggling single mom, which is, to me, a very appealing characteristic of her because it's so 21st century. And she had the same struggles that a woman of our modern times would have in sort of struggling to get through and make money and find a job and raise these two kids. Anyway, in her work at the department store, which was an upscale sort of the Bloomingdale's of of Buffalo in the 1870s, she encountered Grover Cleveland. And he was one of the city's prominent bachelors. And he was attracted to her. She was a beautiful woman. And they were...
And we're still years away from the presidential run. This is when
years,
he was young. Okay.
10 years before. And he was, although he was known in Buffalo, outside of Buffalo, he was a unknown citizen. And one day in around Christmas of 1874, she's walking one way, he's walking the other. She was actually on her way to a birthday party for a friend. And he said, "Let's have dinner." She was sort of resistant. She had these previous plans, but he was pretty persistent. And they went out to dinner at a oyster bar in Buffalo. And they had a good time. And then Grover Cleveland escorted her back to her home. She was then living in a room at a boarding house. And it is there that she says he sexually assaulted her. We would today categorize it as a date rape.
Was Grover Cleveland at the time the sheriff as well in Buffalo?
He had previously served as sheriff, so he had all these law enforcement contacts that you would expect from a guy who was the leading law enforcement agency in Erie County. And after the sexual assault, again, this is her story, he accused her, I think the quote from her is, "Why are you blubbering like a baby?" And she accused him of raping her, and she demanded that he leave her room right now. And he did. 6 weeks later, she finds out that she's pregnant. She wrote him a letter demanding that he come see her, which he did. She revealed to him that she was pregnant. And what encountered was a number of years of absolute drama involving the life of Cleveland and this woman, Maria Halpin.
So the story would follow him along. What happens years later?
Well, the baby is born at a hospital for unwed mothers. There was only one in Buffalo at the time, and he was born in 1874. And the doctor who delivered him, all arranged by Grover Cleveland, was a crony of Cleveland's. He was a very distinguished doctor. And he took the baby in a blanket and took it to his sister-in-law's house. Maria never really saw the child. Months later, she was insistent. She didn't even know whether the child was alive or not. And there was a dramatic encounter where the sister-in-law of the doctor brings the child back to Cleveland's law office, where Maria Halpin is waiting to see the child really for the first time since his birth. And there's this whole scene there, but the child was, again, taken away, taken back to the house of the sister-in-law.
Wasn't that kind of staged just to let the mother know that the child was still alive?
Exactly. It was to reassure her that the child was alive.
So obviously there was some concern for her as well then. Grover Cleveland was concerned about this woman and her child.
I don't think he was concerned at all about the child or the woman. What it did was get her off his back for a brief time. But she was very persistent. You have to bear in mind the mentality of the 19th century Victorian age American women. She felt shamed. She felt that that the only way to mitigate the shame on her honor was to actually marry the man who she says raped her. Now, in our modern day ears, this is unfathomable to us. How could anyone even think of doing that? But this is the 19th century, and times were different, and she wanted to get married to Grover Cleveland, the man she says raped her.
I'm speaking with Charles Lachman. His new book is A Secret Life, published by Skyhorse Publishing. It is about the sex scandal that has been following Grover Cleveland around. Talk what happens next. The child grows up and...
Well, even more drama, Richard. child is actually taken away by force. At some point, the child was returned to Maria, but that only lasted a few months because she was persistent in her campaign to get Cleveland to marry her. So Cleveland felt he had his back was up against the wall, and he arranged through his cronies in the police department to take the child from Maria's arms. They basically burst into her apartment one night in Buffalo, took the child, brought the child to an orphanage, and brought Maria to an insane asylum. Now, the medical director at the institution evaluated Maria, and very quickly that night determined that she was not insane and immediately let her go. What ensued was a campaign on Maria's part to get her son back out of the orphanage. So she begged, she was allowed to visit the child. And after a few weeks, the rigid eyeballing of Maria relaxed a little bit, and she used that as an opportunity to actually snatch the child from the orphanage. She kidnapped her own son, imagine that, and brought him back to her home.
Did they stayed in Buffalo then?
No. Maria's family got involved, and they considered this child to be a stain on the family honor. And they urged Maria to get rid of the child. Again, 19th century America. And she agreed. She worked out a out-of-court settlement with Grover Cleveland. He paid her $500. And she surrendered the rights to the child. The child was returned to the orphanage. And then the story takes a real strange turn. The child was actually adopted by the physician who delivered the child.
Did she, Maria, have any kind of contact with Grover Cleveland during this whole period? They must have had some kind of contact.
Whatever contact they had was filled with bitterness and anger.
Do you think that the story might have turned out differently if Maria hadn't pressured Grover Cleveland to marry her?
Well, I think he would have been, if she had just disappeared and taken the child with her, end of story. No one would have really known about this. It wouldn't have burst into the public scene in 1884 when he was running for president.
You write that this is right out of a novel by Charles Dickens.
It is, and I definitely felt that way. The curious thing about it is that, and what kind of triggered that whole conception to me was the illegitimate child actually became a physician himself. A lot of sort of folklore about whatever happened to him, some stories about how he became an alcoholic, and that all is not true. But he apparently was aware of his background, and when he became a wealthy physician, he lived in a mansion in Buffalo and actually built what he called the Dickens Room. Every piece of furniture, including the wallpaper, all the knickknacks, were somehow related to Dickens' characters from his novels. And his favorite book, of course, was Oliver Twist, The Story of the Orphan Boy.
Now, you've written that she was tricked into giving the baby up for adoption, but didn't they also offer her money?
Well, they gave her $500. That was that out-of-court settlement. Then, and Grover Cleveland, for a time, put her up into business. She was a dressmaker by profession, and he actually helped her finance a store in Niagara Falls for her, but that didn't last long.
And what happened next? I mean, we're starting to approach the time where Grover Cleveland is looking for higher things to do.
Exactly. He had an extraordinary career in politics. In just 3 years' time, he went from being unknown to his election as mayor of Buffalo. 8 months later, he's elected governor of New York. And 2 years later, he's elected the president of the United States. After he got the nomination by the Democratic Party, a Buffalo newspaper, now extinct, called the Evening Telegraph, heard about these rumors. The story was really hand-delivered to them by a local minister. And what ensued was one of the great political scandals in American history.
It's kind of hard for me to believe that a candidate today who had such a, you know, this skeleton in his closet would get elected president of the United States. Talk about that, his Republican opponents and that chant, that "Mama, where's my pa?"
Right. Well, that all comes from that famous political cartoon. It was just Grover Cleveland's good fortune that he was running against James G. Blaine, the Republican candidate. Now, the historical forces were allied with Cleveland. It had been 25 years of continuous Republican rule over the White House, but people were looking for a change, and he was definitely the lead candidate ahead of Blaine. Then the scandal erupts, and suddenly it's the other way. Blaine is in the lead. But Blaine had his own issues. He was notorious for having supposedly taken bribes during the construction of the cross-continental railroad. So he definitely was a sketchy character in his own right. And the choice really came down to, in terms of the American electorate, do you go for Cleveland, who was absolutely pugnaciously honest in his political life, but had this terrible scandal and misdeeds in his private life, or you go with Blaine, who was notoriously corrupt in his political life, but a great dad and a great husband in his private life.
And we have to think about the scandal for a second at this point, because we're not only talking about an illegitimate child, we're talking allegations of rape.
Well, yes, and the thing that put Grover Cleveland over the edge in terms of winning his first election as president was the total defamation of Maria Halpin. What happened is that Cleveland, again, has gone down in history as this honest, incorruptible character. In fact, when the scandal broke out, he famously telegraphed his political allies, "Whatever you say, quote, tell the truth." Total nonsense. What happened was that they went on a deliberate campaign of misinformation and defamation. They called Maria Halpin a slut. They said that she was dating and had sexual relations with at least two and possibly as many as four prominent citizens in Buffalo. Cleveland was one of them, but he bravely, and I use the word bravely in quotes, assumed responsibility for the child's conception because he was the only bachelor among his four married cronies.
I'm wondering if you could address one contradiction that kind of puzzled me when I read it. Grover Cleveland had a longstanding reputation for honesty and independence, as you just mentioned, but that reputation seems to be at odds with his personal behavior. What was he like as a person, not as a president?
Well, he was an interesting character. I don't think that if he were sitting here, we would respect him. He had a brilliant mind. He had total recall. He was gifted with that ability to deliver a speech without even once looking at his notes. And although he never graduated college, he became a lawyer through what they did then. He basically apprenticed as a lawyer. But he was a difficult guy. He was in many ways a prickly character who was able to have close friends among guys. but found being around women to be very uncomfortable.
If voters had really known the truth, do you think the elections might have been decided differently? I mean, they elected him two times, and we would have someone else's face on the $1,000 bill?
Totally. There's not a chance in the world that Cleveland would have been the Democratic nominee had the scandal broken just 2 weeks earlier. He would have absolutely been denied the nomination. And I think that had the truth come out, namely that Maria was not a harlot, that she was a church-going, decent woman who was terribly abused by this man, at least that's her story, then there's not a chance that he would have been elected.
And just finally, the Christian Science Monitor's book review blog said that your nonfiction history story reads like a gripping novel. It seems like you had a lot of fun writing this.
It was torture to to research. It was fun writing. What drew me into the story was this irresistible desire to, after I did the research, to realize that the way American history books, classic books, including a Pulitzer Prize-winning biography of Grover Cleveland, the way they had depicted this guy was just a complete fairy tale, at least as it relates to the scandal.
And are you working on something new now?
I am, but I'm not going to talk about it.
Okay, well, we'll have to have you back on.
I appreciate that.
Okay, Charles Lachman, his book is A Secret Life, The Lies and Scandals of President Grover Cleveland. It's from Skyhorse Publishing. Charles, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.